100 or so people enjoying a night of stand-up on Sunday at the Comedy Cellar in New York City were treated to a guest performance that became more than a nightcap to an evening of jokes.
All right, thank you. Thank you very much.
Louis C.K., the superstar comedian who stepped away from his career after apologizing for sexual misconduct with women, performed a 15-minute stand-up set.
Good. This is good. You're out. Being out is good.
The first set since his exit from the spotlight. Like so many others named in the Me Too movement, C.K. quickly retreated from public life after the allegations.
I've spent my long and lucky career talking and saying anything I want. I will now step back and take a long time to listen. That, a statement from Louis C.K.
Until now. He got a warm welcome on Sunday, and he didn't mention why he'd been away for so long. Over the past few weeks, a film co-starring Kevin Spacey has hit theaters, Matt Lauer has mused to tabloids about his return to television, and other men accused in the past year, Mario Batali, Charlie Rose, Jeremy Piven among them, are reportedly also plotting comebacks. Have they made amends? Have they spent enough time away from showbiz? Have they shown enough remorse? That's for the public to judge, but it is worth asking why now, and where are we with Me Too as we near 1 year from the movement's beginnings? I'm Jordan Heath Rawlings, and this is The Big Story.
An apology, even a half-hearted one, yes, is absolutely a good first step, but it can't be the only step.
Stacey Lee Kong is acting managing editor of Flare.com. She's also been reporting on the Me Too movement for much of the past year.
Since the beginning.
Hi, Stacey.
Hi, Jordan.
Okay, big picture first, then. What's it like at a woman's magazine when you come in the morning and you hear that Spacey's new movie is coming out or Louis C.K. performed stand-up at a club?
We're all a little annoyed.
Yeah?
We have these morning meetings, we have scrums, and we talk about what's trending. And sometimes it is, we don't have a ton to say. So sometimes the story, all we can think about for, you know, we feel a little bit of schadenfreude about Spacey's movie making what, $126 or whatever it was, but there's not a ton to talk about in terms of what that means or what it says about society. And often that's what I want to know about our stories. But as there's been this critical mass of men coming forward and starting to revitalize their careers, it becomes a bigger story. So then you start thinking about then what does it mean or what does it matter? And we have sometimes we have these internal conversations that lead to bigger stories. So we may not have something that's reactive that's happening right now, but we're thinking about it in terms of a larger feature or a larger something.
Right. So as we've seen a few of these comebacks happen, there's been kind of a big difference in terms of how they're received.
Mm-hmm. It's very.
Why is it that, like you said, Spacey's movie can make, you know, 100 something bucks and everybody can say, okay, well, he's still out in the cold. But by all accounts, Louis C.K.'s performance was really well received. He got a warm reception. It was a surprise. People didn't know he was going to be there, and they welcomed him back. What's the difference?
You know, I've asked myself the same question because I really don't know. When you look at the way these two cases played out, they're very similar. Kevin Spacey allegedly used his position of power to manipulate and abuse young men over, you know, it seems like a long period of time. And Louis C.K. has admitted to using his power and using his influence in the comedy world to manipulate and abuse women.
And there was in both cases, there were rumors about them.
Yes.
Out there before Me Too hit.
Absolutely. And from what I recall, I don't remember if Kevin Spacey, the rumors about him, if he had gone out of his way to quash them. But it does sound like we've heard stories of Louis C.K. doing that.
Yeah.
And gaslighting women and doing, you know, sort of allegedly doing all of these things that seem a little bit Weinstein-esque on a much smaller scale. But when you think about what Weinstein did to protect his secrets and to allow himself to continue manipulating and abusing women, there's a common thread there. But I wonder if it has something to do with the worlds that we're talking about. So as much as comedy and acting are still the entertainment industry, I do wonder if, you know, does Kevin Spacey's alleged crimes feel less bad than Weinstein's? And so when you're looking at it on that scale, whereas Louis C.K., he is still really well loved in the comedy world. And there's a lot of men who have gone on Twitter and who are progressive and who have talked about, you know, is there a way to move forward? How do we come to terms with what happened during Me Too? And then, you know, what's next? And I think when those guys are asking about what's next, what that means is how do we welcome our friends back into the fold? You know, they did something wrong, but they've gone away and, you know, can they come back now? And when I'm thinking about what's next, that is not what I'm thinking.
What are you thinking about then?
Thanks for asking, Jordan. So we also have these conversations. And the way that we covered Me Too when it first unfolded, when, you know, Flair first had this long list of, we kept updating this list of allegations against Weinstein. And
yeah, that was like daily.
Daily. And I think it got up to 70-something women. And at that point, we actually had to stop because we could not keep on top of all of the allegations. And on top of that, there was, if you're thinking about big picture, there's this human cost of doing that type of reporting day in and day out.
Yeah.
So at a certain point, we decided we weren't sure if that kind of story was best serving our audience. We also had another list of the other people who were alleged to have abused people. And that one we have been updating a little bit more regularly. I think the last time we updated it was in July. But the way that we've covered things has kind of moved in the same way of Me Too, where first we just were trying to get all these stories out. And then as Me Too has evolved and as our coverage has evolved, we've been thinking about what's next. And for me, that has to be more than just going away. The writer Liz Plank tweeted, the moral of the story is that if you sexually harass a bunch of people, you get to take the summer off, in reference to Louis C.K.
Right.
That's not my ideal. My ideal is that if there aren't legal repercussions for your actions, if the statute of limitations has ended, or maybe the person who has come forward just doesn't want to press charges, that's fine, but that doesn't mean you're off the hook. There are other things that you should be doing. You should probably go to therapy. You know, I'm not a doctor, but I feel like some introspection might be a good thing in this case. You should certainly be doing some visible things. Are you, you know, donating to charities that help abused women? Are you actually actively apologizing?
Right. Admission of wrongdoing.
Which
Louis C.K. did before he left. He admitted to everything and said he had a problem.
Absolutely. I would argue that it was not the best apology.
No, it was all right.
But it happened. That's
true. It was more than a lot of the men on that list did at the time.
That is true. But I think for me and for other women who are covering this, you know, it's really difficult to hear those stories. As a woman in particular, it's really difficult to hear those stories about a man who uses his power to not just take advantage of women, but to make them feel like they're crazy when they try and speak out about it. And so an apology, even a half-hearted one, yes, is absolutely a good first step. But it can't be the only step.
Yeah, and here's where I want to really ask you about how we accept these people back, because there can't be like a checklist where you do A, then B, then C, then D, and everything is okay again. That seems nuts. But at the same time, there's also no, because in the majority of these cases, there are no charges and convictions. So you also can't use the standby, like, well, he's done his time and paid his debt to society, and now he has a right to, you know, try to come back and regain his old job. So where do we look for guidance on, like, how long is too long out in the cold? How long is not long enough? Who gets canceled forever versus people who get to take the summer off? Like, how do we kind of figure out a policy? Is it even possible?
I don't know if it's possible. I almost wonder if it's, you know, that saying about art, how you know it when you see it. I almost feel like, you know, it's enough time when you see it, when it feels like enough time. I've been thinking about rehabilitation a lot and in general, what it means for us to call out this bad behavior and say that it's real and acknowledge that, which is super powerful and hasn't often happened. But then, like, that is my question of what's next. It's how do you it is how you rehabilitate people, but it's also who is responsible for rehabilitating people.
Yeah.
And I don't think that the women who have been abused, like, I don't think the women that make up the Time's Up movement are responsible, or the men, or anybody who has been victimized. I don't think it's their responsibility to provide a roadmap and to say, okay, now you should know that you have spent enough time and, you know, 4 months wasn't enough and 9 months wasn't enough, but a year would be enough.
Right, or $5,000 to rain is not quite enough, but $50,000 is.
Exactly. I don't think that there's a way to provide a checklist or a roadmap, but I do think it comes down to intentions. And to me, I can understand why an artist wants to continue creating their art, but there's something kind of slimy to me about, like, okay, I'm going to show up and I'm going to do this stand-up show. It's going to be unannounced. I'm not going to say it's happening because then maybe I'll face criticism. And I'm in this very safe place because the comedy bar that Louis C.K. appeared at, it appeared in the credits to his show, right? Like, yeah. It's not like he went to a neutral, he didn't appear on neutral ground.
No, that was his home turf.
That was absolutely his home turf. And I can understand as a human being why you want to do that. You've done something wrong and you're slowly dipping your toe back into your regular life and you want to go where it feels safe. But maybe the right thing to do would have been to not go where it felt safe. Maybe the right thing to do would have been to be more open about it and take the criticism you got and in that way show that you are willing to make an effort and you are willing to not just give a pat apology that said I did a wrong thing, but actually show in your actions that you are sorry.
Right. And that's a big difference. Interesting, because that's a big difference between what happened to Louis C.K. and what happened to Kevin Spacey. As everybody knew for months that Kevin Spacey's movie was going to come out. I mean, he wasn't the main star of it, so it's almost not fair to call it Kevin Spacey's movie.
Fair enough, yeah.
But everybody knew that there was a movie coming out with Kevin Spacey in it that had been filmed before these allegations and was going to be released. So there was enough time for a groundswell of, well, let's boycott this movie. Let's show him that he has no place here, et cetera, et cetera. Whereas in general, I think most crowds in a comedy club or a concert club, when you bring out a superstar, are going to be like, oh, hey, that's cool, right? There's no chance to have people down there outside the bar.
Exactly. And well, also because is that crowd in the comedy club, I mean, maybe they're not even super, not to say that they're not aware of Me Too, but maybe they're not super plugged into the movement. It's unlikely that they didn't know he had done something.
Yep.
But maybe they didn't know the details. Maybe they gave him a standing ovation because they were super excited to see a star, as you say, but it wasn't like they were super plugged in a way they may have been if there had been time for someone to say, hey, op-ed.
Yeah.
I don't think you should go to Louis C.K.'s show.
A lot of men accused in the Me Too movement seem to be dipping their toe back in around the same time. Matt Lauer was on Page Six in New York the other day talking about his TV comeback. Jeremy Piven is working on a comeback. Mario Batali, who famously apologized with a cinnamon rolls recipe, is also talking about a comeback. Why now? We're kind of a year, we're almost a year.
I wonder if they feel like it has felt like so long for them. And actually, there's something that we have noticed, which is that we have wondered if there's a bit of Me Too fatigue. Not to say that these are always, they are always important stories. I would never say that. But we have noticed that some of the reporting that we've done hasn't resonated with our audience in the same way as, you know, in those initial days when every day people were checking back to see what was Weinstein accused of now. So I wonder if there's that feeling of, you know, there's Me Too fatigue in the world.
Okay, so now I have a slightly uncomfortable question. How do we determine who has to sit out the longest, do the most penance, apologize the most sincerely? How do you come to terms with who's worse than what? Like, it's different for every person.
It is. And I think there's a distinction. First, I don't think that I'm not thinking about this in terms of the perspective of the person who was harmed. I think regardless of how bad someone's actions were, that doesn't mean that the harm is less. In general, I think the thing that makes me more receptive to someone having a comeback is them showing genuine remorse. And I think you can tell when it's a checklist where they're doing things that their PR says and when there is real, genuine feelings of sorrow and remorse.
Who's done that?
Did you see Casey Affleck's interview? He talked about the allegations against him and he talked about his behavior on set when he was a director.
You know, the buck had to stop with me as being one of the producers, and I have to.
I think that he held himself pretty accountable. I don't think it was perfect. There was a part where I felt like he was slightly implying that he was, like, essentially he talked about being young and not having tons of experience, and he helped create an environment that he should not have. And, I mean, I don't think you have to be really old and mature to know that it's wrong to put young women in vulnerable positions.
Right.
So I don't totally buy that part. But in general,
I behaved in a way and I allowed others to behave in a way that was really unprofessional. And I'm sorry.
I was glad to hear that he had held himself accountable. I was glad to hear that he was thinking about it. And I think one of the things that was key is that he kind of said, like, we don't need to talk about it so much. We don't need to, essentially, he didn't need to give himself an out or make himself look better. What he wanted to talk about is what he needed to do now, as opposed to trying to ameliorate his actions before. And I thought that was a good model. And it made me feel much more positively towards the idea of Casey Affleck continuing to work, you know?
What do you think is going to happen over the next few months to these comebacks?
Well, I hope some people don't get them. I hope right. that they... I hope that, you know, Matt Lauer has to do a lot more work than talking about how he's spending time with his family. Him, I would like to donate some money. A lot of money. He has a lot of money.
Right.
I would like him to do some financial good for people who have been victimized and marginalized. But for all of them, I really do want that honest conversation. And that's not just me as a journalist speaking. I think that's me as a person saying, if you want me to watch you on TV again, if you want me as a consumer to make decisions that make you money, you're going to have to do a bit more than just, you know, duck out of the public eye and hope that people forget. Because I think that's an old-fashioned PR strategy that doesn't hold up anymore.
Thanks, Stacey.
No problem.
Stacey Lee Kong, managing editor and reporter at Flare.com. That was The Big Story. For more from us, you can visit us at thebigstorypodcast.ca. You can hit us up on Facebook, Twitter, or Instagram at Big Story Podcast. And you can find us on just about any podcast app. And you could subscribe for free, rate, and review us there as well. I'm Jordan Heath-Rawlings. Thank you for listening. We'll talk tomorrow.